Welcome to the Critical Few Actions to Improve Your Business podcast. I'm John Downes, and I'm here to help you cut through the overwhelm and prioritize what matters most to improve your business. Let's get started and discover the critical few actions that have the biggest impact. Today, I'd like to introduce you to Joshua Morse of accounting firm Sauer Dawson. Josh and I were judges of the Whitehorse Business Excellence Awards in Victoria for about 10 years. And over that time, we got to look at a whole range of businesses. Some were startups, some were mature mid-market businesses, some had more than 1,000 staff, and some were charities and not-for-profits. We were often asked to judge the overall winners across all categories, which drew on our rich experience across all of those sectors. Josh, welcome.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. So if you're the owner or CEO of a business that's working hard to make profitable products and services, and it's just not showing up on the bottom line, then this episode's for you. In any business, we deduct from revenue the costs of producing the goods or services delivered to customers to get our gross profit. And from that, we then deduct our other operating costs to get our net profit to reinvest in the business and pay dividends to shareholders. It's this second category of expenses that's often overlooked when managing the business. And this includes those essential costs like operational costs, HR, payroll and trading, facilities and infrastructure, marketing and selling costs, IT costs, general administration costs, finance and borrowing costs, and of course, taxation and compliance costs. These are all often seen as a necessary evil in any business, but they're essential to create the fabric of the business so it can deliver value to our customers. So Josh, you've been working with small and medium-sized businesses for over 20 years now. After they've delivered a product or a service with a healthy margin, where do you see businesses struggle or fail to retain a decent net profit? In fact, before we even get into that, what sort of profitability should a small to medium-sized business be targeting as a percentage of their revenue?
Yeah, some really good questions there, John. I think some of the answer perhaps lies in a couple of areas. Just the operational costs, I think, can be perhaps overlooked. I think that any business owner, leader, manager of a business really needs to look through the strategic lens when it comes to operational costs. I think that you're right, there are these bare necessities in terms of here's a cost, you can't avoid it, could be a license or a registration fee or something like that. For a lot of businesses, you have to employ people, you can't avoid that. Yeah. I think, though, that there's a number of different categories of operational cost. And while there might be the necessity category, I guess there's also the investment lens or category. And so, you know, the decision to spend money to incur costs, is that happening at a strategic level? We're investing in the future, or is it just going to benefit us now, which potentially may even cost more in the future if we're not spending at the right time on the right things? I think to your second question around target net profit percentages, that's probably one that depends a little bit in terms of the industry that a client might be in. I think that to assist with the answer to that, there are some good benchmarking tools available. We use a number of tools across our client base to provide some insight and guidance into best practice, what other similar businesses might be achieving from some of the data. And it's not easy to get actually SME data. There's not a lot of data that is made publicly available, but there are a number of tools that do provide some good benchmarking. But I think, you know, target net profit, you know, is going to be different if you're in a professional services business. Well, you know, perhaps you're looking at close to the 25% mark as a good benchmark. Other businesses, if you are the distribution space, whether that's technology, you know, the margins on gross margins on those sorts of businesses is a lot lower. Maybe you're only making 2%, for example, gross margin. And then your net profit margin really is about volume. And it's the gross profit in terms of or net profit in terms of dollars that you ultimately end up with, it's driven by volume. So I think the percentage is going to vary quite a lot depending on what sort of business activity you're in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in my CEO masterclass, we use the IBIS World industry research quite a lot to understand not only our own industry, but the industry of our customers as well. And that provides some pretty good benchmarking data on the sort of profitability. But typically I challenge, you know, my successful clients in the middle market to aim for a minimum of 15% just to take into account all of the risks that they're taking. But some of my clients have a net profit above 40% of their revenue in the professional services sector. So that's absolutely in line with what you were just saying. But one of the things that I guess I often see with small and medium business owners is that firstly, they actually don't know what the percentage is in the first place. It's not something that they actually really look at. And that's a major business operations hygiene issue. The second thing is that they don't know what the industry benchmarks are for their sector, which doesn't give them anything to actually draw comparisons to. The third thing is that, you know, they're quite comfortable with, you know, 4 or 5%, but they don't realize how much risk that they're actually taking. So the risk of actually going to jail for employment manslaughter or for breaches of the WorkSafe guidelines, you know, is quite a substantial risk. The fact that their business and also their personal and their home assets are on the line, they tend not to think about. And this is largely not because they're ignorant, but because they're so buried in the business and doing the business of the business, that they don't think about the fact that, you know, if you put your money in the bank at the moment, you're likely to get 4.5% to 5%. And that's totally risk-free. It's government guaranteed. It's funny, you can actually use that phrase. You can take it to the bank. And so when their business is performing at about the same level, but they're actually taking on massive risks, they're taking on leases, they're taking on large insurance policies, they're looking after the wages and the mortgages of their staff, as well as their health and hygiene and their safety, they really need to be looking to get, you know, that minimum 15% to really make it worthwhile taking on that risk. And sometimes that's quite a shock for my clients, but then that gives us something to work with. You know, when you know you've got an issue, all of a sudden you can do something about it. So Josh, after a business has delivered a healthy margin on product or service, where do you see businesses struggle or fail when they're trying to retain a decent net profit?
Yeah, look, I think for a lot of businesses, different shapes and sizes, at the end of the day, I do very much think that managing cash flow is absolutely critical. And, you know, there's plenty of situations where you can have a great profitable business, but if you don't have any money in the bank, it's going to create a number of issues. So I think perhaps where businesses don't necessarily tend to manage their business as well is definitely in the cash flow planning, forecasting space. I think that, again, businesses need to be strategic and they need to plan for when they invest in their business. And so, you know, technology, for example, has changed incredibly and continues to gather pace. And I think most businesses tend to appreciate that they need to invest in technology. Otherwise, they're just simply going to fall behind. So sometimes the question isn't about, do I invest, for example, in technologies in my business to make me more efficient, et cetera. But it's also about when. It's a timing around when you invest or incur strategic costs becomes really important. For example, if you invest at the forefront of a new technology,
yeah.
Well, it might be great to be able to say, you know, you're a leader in this particular field because you've invested in this technology. But sometimes being early adopters of technology actually means you're helping develop and make that product or that technology better before it's actually reached, I guess, the value equation. At what point in time do the costs actually start delivering real value? And so you know, there's plenty of examples even in our business where we have deferred investing in certain technologies for a point in time until the value equation becomes worthwhile. It's not about, no, we're not going to invest in technology. It's actually, do we want to actually probably spend more to be early adopters, or are we going to wait and make sure that when we incur those costs, we're actually going to see the value of that particular investment?
Yeah, well, it's called the bleeding edge for a reason. You know, being an early adopter is indeed a strategic decision. And it's not just the surface cost of the technology that actually is going to be the real issue. It's all the additional costs that the business has to incur to actually marshal that technology and take advantage of it. So it's a strategic decision as much as, well, it needs to be more of a strategic decision than one of pure enthusiasm.
Absolutely agree.
Are you looking to pinpoint the areas that will make the biggest impact on your business? Check out the Organization Performance and Value Diagnostic. This powerful tool lets you evaluate your business on multiple facets and provides email reminders to keep you on track. Head over to criticalfewactions.com.au and get started now.
So Josh, thinking about these operational and below-the-line costs, tell me a bit more about your thinking around this, because you know, you talked about opportunity cost and so on. And I think that's something that's important to dig into a bit more.
Sure. Well, I guess any business decision, whether it's on the revenue side, whether it's on the supply side, whether it's the operational cost side of things, I think when you look to incur an expense or investment, you do very much need to look at what are the consequences of incurring that expenditure now? What impact will it have on my business into the future? But there's also the opportunity cost of not spending the money. And so hence why we talk very much about these strategic lens. For example, opportunity cost of not investing in IT security, particularly now, 20 years ago, you know, if you had a password and you used some numbers and digits, that was great. You had a great password. Your security was sorted. These days, it's not the case. And so, you know, the investment in security, particularly with online web stores or dealing with customer credit card payments, even just protecting our customer data. We don't need to talk about all the breaches public domain over the last few years. But businesses these days who are not spending funds to ensure that their security, their IT systems are in fact secure to the best of their ability.
Yeah.
That's no absolute guarantee. But there's certainly measures that are taken to ensure that it's done well to protect customers and the business. And so, you know, the opportunity cost, for example, of not spending money in that space, I think is absolutely significant. And so, yeah, I think that looking at cost strategically, the timing of when those costs are incurred, but the opportunity cost of not spending insured, I think are really important strategically for a business.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we think about these below the gross profit line costs, are there any that come to mind as being essential for early wins if a business is looking at to improve their profitability?
Yeah, look, I think conceptually, I see it being really important for businesses to ensure that their costs or their incurring costs around good governance and good business hygiene. And that's as much about not taking shortcuts on things just because it might cost something now. And particularly with businesses who perhaps are really strong growth phase, there's lots happening. You know, there's lots of changes and decisions need to be made quickly. Whereas it certainly assists to have some good business governance and accountability systems in place. and ensuring that businesses have the support that they need. I mean, there comes times where an owner, for example, of a business, owners of a business, can no longer and should no longer be involving themselves wearing, you know, the various hats that perhaps they once did. You know, I think outsourcing some of the non-core activities of their business becomes really important to allow business owners to focus on where they can bring the greatest value to their business. You know, for a startup business, obviously, you know, funding's not perhaps significant. There's things that owners need to wear multiple hats on. But I think those good governance systems and strategic plans and the cash flow forecasts will actually help owners make good strategic decisions around when they need to spend the money, when they need to stop doing certain things so they can actually focus on where they bring the greatest amount of value to the business. You touched earlier on business owners perhaps not spending time on the business because they're always sucked into the detail. And I think that, you know, that is so true. And I think a lot of business owners know that, but it's sometimes hard to extract themselves out of those things where perhaps they don't have those good governance systems and business hygiene. And at some point, being able to outsource elements of their business to other people who do those sorts of things well frees up that time and will actually bring strategic growth to an organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's probably one of the biggest challenges that business owners and their CEOs struggle with is when's the appropriate time to effectively buy back time so that they can focus on the things that are actually the higher value add. You know, I talk to my CEOs and founders about, you know, what are the $500 an hour tasks that they do, you know, which only they can do in the business, and are they worth $500 an hour? And making strategic decisions and investigating into new markets might well be considered to be a $500 an hour task. Having really good peer relationships with top two or three customers who might be responsible for 50 or 60% of their revenue, having those relationships might be considered definitely a $500 an hour task. But there are a hell of a lot of tasks that they find that are actually they could easily be paying somebody between $25 and $35 an hour to do, which frankly they've been doing since day one. They've always done it and they don't even notice that they're doing it, but it might be chewing up, you know, 10 hours of their week when they could actually be doing something that's far higher value. And, you know, quite often come back to me and say, oh, look, I was out doing this particular task and that wasn't a $500 an hour task. And so, you know, when I have clients who are starting to laugh at me about their behavior, it's a good sign that the message has gotten through.
Look, that's actually a really good point. And, you know, to be able to measure perhaps the opportunity cost or doing or not doing the right sorts of things is actually a really good process to think about as a business owner. And I think what you just said there are some really good examples of trying to sharpen the pencil, refocus again, where does a person provide the greatest amount of value to the organization? And I think we, as owners of businesses, need to ask ourselves that question every day. And yeah, so I think, again, there's some good business disciplines. I think some of that challenge is that, well, if someone is not challenged, if they're not held accountable, I know that, you know, a lot of the work that you do, John, has been in helping business owners with that accountability. And it is so important because it's so lonely at the top sometimes. And there's lots of decisions that need to be made. And one really important other factor, I think, is behind every business are people. There's families. Life is full. Life is busy. And, you know, running a business now, today, is far more complicated in a lot of ways, certainly from a compliance perspective, than perhaps what it was, you know, again, 20 years ago. Not to say it was any easier back then, but there's different risks and obligations and things that owners need to consider. You mentioned some of the work cover, you know, and there's so not work cover, the work, work safe. And even now we see large organizations still not perhaps being able to follow the complexity of awards to pay their own staff. If large organizations struggle to get some of those sort of things right, it's a pretty significant onus on small business, medium-sized businesses and organizations to be able to do that. And I think, you know, that risk reward goes back to what return should I be expecting on my business from the risks that business owners take on is really important. It's a lot of those sort of things in perspective.
Absolutely. So if I think some of the elements of those below-the-line costs, as I call them, I think there's often a case when it comes to training, investments in training, but also investment in IT. We were talking before about a case study, so I think it tells a very important story.
Sure. So we, 2 years ago, were working with a national-based organization. They were a for-purpose organization, I guess, in the education space, if you like. They have a number of branches all across Australia, and they weren't perhaps receiving, I guess, the reports, so quality reports they really needed to be able to run that organization. And we were tasked with reviewing their systems, their processes. We really had to delve in to understand their financial system, who was doing what, how that worked, what activities were the organization undertake. And so we went through quite a detailed process of gathering that information. It was sort of floated that, look, maybe this is the IT financial reporting accounting system. Maybe we need to move. Maybe this isn't for us. Maybe we need to look at other options. And so I guess it was with that sort of lens, could we actually change systems? Now, you know, from an operational cost perspective, there can be some pain and suffering with changing systems. Sometimes it can be a good thing to change an IT system. Absolutely. But I think it comes back to the opportunity costs and making sure you've done the modelling and you've actually assessed and making educated decisions as to whether to spend or not to spend later.
Yeah, it's always going to be disruptive and expensive.
Correct. And so, you know, for this particular client, we went through that process and we worked with some other system providers to get some ideas of quotes and what's involved.
Yeah.
But the other thing that we did do was actually invested some time to explore in a bit more detail their current system. It wasn't a system per se that we did a lot of work in ourselves, but to roll up our sleeves, really dig in to see what was happening. Actually did a couple of things because I guess we were able to identify that actually there's some functionality that your current system has, but it's not switched on. And so how about we also work with your current IT provider, service provider, and make sure, have we got a release? Have we got these modules turned on? Are they available? After looking at a number of various options of transition to new systems, we actually did come to the conclusion that their investment in their own current existing system by taking the time to switch on the right functionality, to change some internal systems and processes that was actually going to bring efficiencies across the organization and actually make it easier for all of the various users to enter the data was going to be made much, much easier. And so as we looked at the opportunity cost of that and the actual costs, we actually came to the conclusion that they were far better off to invest in their current system and basically use what they already had available better. And so, you know, that process actually was very well worthwhile to go through. In a lot of respects, they were perhaps quite relieved that actually the disruption that would have otherwise been caused didn't need to occur. We were able to achieve some great outcomes with better quality of reporting, data input, more or greater efficiencies with the way the data is captured, and then having confidence in the output. So, that was a really great project, I guess, to be able to work all that time and deliver some great outcomes from there.
Yeah, it's interesting. And that's actually not that uncommon. You know, when organizations take on large technology projects, you know, I often see that there are actually two phases of the implementation from the point of view of getting the staff and the business to actually use the functionality. The first one is, how do we get the new system to do what we used to do? You know, just as a basic thing, how do we get invoices out the door? How do we actually receive product and put it away in our warehouse? And how do we actually bank money? You know, it's basically, how do we get on with the basic survival stuff? And quite often, they providers try and teach them everything that there is to know about the system, and it's actually quite pointless. They just need to know how to do what they're doing yesterday. And then there needs to be a second wave of training whereby they actually get to actually review how the system's actually been implemented and are they getting full value out of all the functionality that they've purchased. And usually that's a function of training more so than it is anything else. And I quite often think about it from the point of view of, you know, we talk about spreadsheeting and using things like Microsoft Excel or Google Sheets. You know, when you first learn how to use a spreadsheet, you know, you're basically laying out text and numbers and you're adding them up and doing averages and doing some basic calculations, and that's all fine. And that's sort of a starting point. Maybe you're doing a VLOOKUP table and that might give you something a little bit more sophisticated. But, you know, once you've gotten that basic functionality, there is so much functionality that's at your fingertips. If only you even knew it existed, let alone how to actually handle it. And so, you know, you need to go back and dip into some additional training to handle things like, okay, well, how do we actually handle pivot tables and how do we actually do data input and export in a way that actually allows us to manipulate our data in a much more sophisticated and very, very efficient way. Fortunately, artificial intelligence, particularly things like Claude and ChatGPT, are just waiting there to tell you exactly how to go about doing it formula by formula. And I must admit, I find that the interface between me, artificial intelligence, which is my training partner, and Google Sheets or Microsoft Excel is quite a nice marriage between the three of us. So,
you know, there's a lot in that, isn't there? And, you know, I think it's always important to understand what do we need to do? What do we need to just get done? What must the system do? Well, I think it's also good to have a foot in the other camp that says, okay, well, what can we do better? And I think, you know, the current landscape is ripe for being able to continually ask those questions in terms of, you know, on the journey of continuous process, you know, maybe not just be content with what we've always done, but always look for ways to actually improve. I mean, with the likes of Power BI these days, being able to build dashboards by integrating with existing systems, there's some wonderful tools that provides real-time data in a way that business owners can actually understand. And, you know, understanding, you know, key performance indicators and drivers of businesses that can all be summarized in fantastic ways very easily, real time, by using other tools, perhaps not just the conventional Excel-based tool, but things like the Microsoft products and other providers, but particularly Power BI. We do some work with to build dashboards and real-time data reporting for clients is really, really exciting.
Yeah. And I guess as we sort of think about the different areas of those sort of operational costs, you know, it's important always to think about, you know, what's driving a decision. So when I think about facilities and infrastructure, you know, the one that comes to mind for me is warehousing. You know, I rarely come across a client that doesn't think that they need a bigger warehouse, but that does raise a question, you know. Have they actually looked inside their warehouse and are they optimizing how they use it? Is their pallet racking and their Dexion, is that going up as high as it really should be? Are they using the right forklifts to actually actively use the space more effectively? Could they relay the aisles narrower with better forklifts now to actually increase the size of their warehouse without changing the four walls by an extra 20%. And now they're using something like the Glenn Doe SIV analysis, which can actually help them talk about, you know, what's the frequency of access and how much of this stock is actually redundant. When they start to do that, they find out that they've actually got more warehouse space than they actually need. And so taking on off-site warehousing and storage is an unnecessary expense. You know, so coming back to what you were saying before, you know, it's important to always be thinking about, okay, are we getting the best value for our operating expenses? And are we challenging how we can use this in better ways? You know, the other area which sometimes frightens me, and it's a really important case in point at the moment, is the finance and borrowing costs. Unfortunately, warehousing is a parallel example because many organisations think that all they need is to be able to borrow more money. And sadly, that can be the worst possible situation. I'm thinking about a client at the moment who Harold was the CEO and a really innovative guy, and partnered up with his finance manager, we'll call James. And James was a lovely guy who always wanted to help out his CEO with the new initiatives that he did. But he didn't realize as finance manager that one of his responsibilities was actually to manage the finance. And part of managing the finance is to actually say, well, actually, we can't afford this. Unfortunately, his response to any good innovation that his CEO came up with was to go out and find another way to borrow money to actually solve that need. And so, sadly, the two of them effectively saddled the business with so much debt that they're now going through a formal insolvency process because there's no capacity for this business to ever repay the debt, let alone even to meet its interest payments, which I've found really sad, but unfortunately there was absolutely nothing that we could do.
Yeah, it does raise a very important point and a question we often either get asked or is definitely in the minds of a lot of business owners, and that is that there's perhaps sometimes a sense that the best way to do things is to buy or to own assets. And I think to own an asset or not to own an asset also needs to be looked at from a strategic perspective. Yeah. Because depending on where a business is at, what its goals and objectives are, sometimes not owning certain assets is the better decision. And so it's not always the case that by owning something, which often comes with carrying debt, as you mentioned, you know, needing to make those repayments on debt, you know, takes away some capital that could otherwise be invested in the business. And doing the modeling, understanding again, when is perhaps the right time to buy, or is buying and actually owning particular assets actually not the best business methodology? What is going to provide me with the greatest return over a period of time and value? And so, some really good strategic decisions or questions to be asked rather than just assuming that the best outcome is to own everything and take on more debt.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess, you know, that then as we sort of cascade through, you know, we've talked about operating costs, we've talked about a little bit about HR and payroll and training, and we've touched on facilities and IT costs, finance and borrowing costs. We then get down to the issues around taxation and compliance costs. Where do you think that there's opportunities for more attention by business owners and CEOs
My view is that the business taxes, and I guess I mean that broadly, whether it's income tax, whether it's employer or employee obligations or superannuation, as you go, GST, all of those items really are an operational cost. It is the cost of doing business and while, you know, it's our job to ensure that those costs are mitigated, you often can't avoid them, particularly if you're doing well in your business. But I think far too often, a lot of the tax compliance costs, they're left, if you like, to be right at the bottom of the chain before or after everything else has been factored in. But it is so important to ensure that all of those taxes are also factored in as a cost of doing business, and it needs to be handled quite well. You know, I know that, you know, it's about immediately post-COVID, you know, there was certainly a lot more leeway with the tax authorities in terms of allowing for businesses to be able to recover and catch up on some of the challenges they went through. I think it's fair to say that those days are now over.
Well, truly.
And so the approach really from the tax authorities, especially, you know, and you have to look at Australia's economic situation and debt, the government still needs to pay their debts as well. Where do they get that from? Well, they have to collect their debts from small business. And what small business probably make up in terms of GDP, it's probably over 50% of Australia's GDP. And they employ something like 70% of staff in Australia. So small business are critical, they're crucial to the economy. But there's a fair bit of debt owed by small business to the tax office. So my view is that the taxes and compliance costs, it's a cost of doing business. It needs to be factored in just like any other operational cost, and it needs to be done well. And so, again, those cash flow forecasts and not looking at taxes as a view of we'll deal with those later, it really needs to be factored in now. And I think that that theme of deferred reward is also relevant. You're better to ensure that you're looking at returns, and when owners are looking to extract funds from a business, they need to do that in the mindset of an after-tax return, not just there's money in the bank, I'm going to grab that now. And so, taxes, compliance, also very important, but in my view, very much an operational cost that needs to be managed well, strategically, in fact, again, as part of the ongoing operations of the business.
Yeah, fantastic.
So, Josh, you know, as we've covered a lot of ground today, how do you help your client manage their operational costs and get a better handle on their profitability?
Yeah, so I guess in Taller, we talk often around our Saver Dawson 360 or SD 360 sort of program, which is something that we look to engage with all of our clients on. And that model perhaps is going to look different for different types of clients, but that's everything from actually developing their own dynamic integrated three-way cash flow forecast, which actually they can form the basis of ongoing strategic discussions and planning. You know, I think having tools such as a dynamic forecast tool, it's not a budget. It's something that is managed, looked at, updated every month. And it's the next best thing to having a crystal ball. And I think we all know that, look, the next 3 months of a business is critical, but the next 12 months is also important. And I think that a lot of people, including myself, we're all visuals. We like to be able to see things, touch and feel. But I do think that far too often there's decisions perhaps made on the fly without necessarily considering for what impact is that decision going to have. Am I best to do that now, or should I actually wait 3 months or 5 months or once this particular event has passed? And I think using your cash flow modeling tool also provides a bit of a what-if type scenario planning and really helps owners make better educated decisions. So that's certainly one way. I think there's lots of different tools available now that integrate with accounting systems. Once upon a time, you know, accounting systems or providers, they tried to do everything, but they often didn't do everything well. And now I think the environment is such that this provider can tap into this system, whether it's using APIs or what have you. And so if this system over here does this piece really, really well, I think to be able to use, if you like, the best of breed Use the systems that do what they do really well, provided you can integrate them, you can achieve fantastic outcome. And so helping clients, I guess, understand systems and are there better ways of doing what they need to be done through systems and technology is another way that we help clients. But I think, we talked a lot already about strategic decisions, being able to work with and go on the journey with our clients around a lot of the strategic side of things and keeping clients, I guess, accountable in that process, whether that is working towards a growth strategy, it could actually be an exit strategy. It could be a transition. So therefore, succession becomes really important.
Absolutely.
It could just be managing risks, whether that's through insurances or buy-sell agreements and those sort of things. But look, at the end of the day, I think every business really should have a cash flow forecasting tool to enable them to make the best possible decisions at the most appropriate time that actually then feeds into their strategic growth.
Yeah, fantastic.
If you really want to kick off your strategic planning and work in a supportive environment with other CEOs and leaders, the CEO Masterclass in Strategic Planning and Implementation is for you. This 10-month small group course helps you craft your strategic plan, present it to a group of peer investors, and develop a habit of monthly implementation. Our waitlist is open now at criticalfewactions.com.au. So Josh, if a founder or a CEO is looking to improve their profitability, what critical few actions should they start tomorrow if they did nothing else?
Great question. I think, in my view, making sure that they employ good business decisions and disciplines, good business hygiene, to then enable that strategic element to their business and absolutely put in place a cash flow forecast tool.
Fantastic. Josh, it's been an absolute delight to talk with you about this and also to give us a fascinating insight into some of the clients that you support on their path to growth. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks, John.
Thanks for listening to the Critical Few Actions podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and grab the downloadables from the show notes. And if you found this episode helpful, I'd really appreciate it if you share it with your peers and your team. Stay focused and take action. The Critical Few Actions podcast, including show notes and links, provides general information only and is not individualized business advice, nor can it be relied upon as such. You must take responsibility for your own advice, decisions, and actions.